Hello and welcome to Dear Franny, the podcast where I have uncommon conversations about love with fascinating people. I'm your host, Francesca Hoagie. Today on the podcast, we have the person who knows more about Dear Franny podcast than anyone. It is Bex Carlos. Bex is a podcast host in her own right, among other things, but she's also an editor, and she is the editor of Dear Franny podcast. So I was very excited to sit down and get to know Bex a little bit better on a personal level. And we talk love, we talk self-love, we talk growing up as a woman of color in America, and we talk interracial dating, and it's just a great conversation with Bex. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Bex Carlos. Hello and welcome to Dear Franny. I'm your host, Francesca Hoagie, and today I have a special guest, a very special guest, Bex Carlos. Bex, welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh, Franny, thank you so much for having me.
I'm very happy to have you. I'm really excited to talk to you, and I'm going to share with everyone your bio and all of the amazing things that you do, but I also have to mention to our listeners that Bex is my podcast editor, so she is the editor of Dear Franny, so she knows the show probably better than I do because you've heard all the episodes more times than I have. I have the conversations, and then you make them into something people actually want to listen to.
I make it sound good, you know? So if you're enjoying this, Franny is the mastermind. I'm just the one who cleans it up a little bit for her. So
okay. You're not just the anything, but... So Bex Carlos is a podcaster, activist, audio editor, obviously, and producer. Found a job working for AmeriCorps Vista. Explain to Me, which is Bex's podcast, which I definitely want to talk to you about. Explain to Me is a show focusing on people of color having conversations to decolonize. Yes. Trying to understand the nonsense of the melaninless. You say it.
The nonsense of the melaninless.
The melanlit. Yes. Oh my gosh. You know what? There's certain words that I can't say. I mean, I've never tried to say that word before. I think now I should have rehearsed that before.
Honestly, I had the hardest time saying the word Syracuse. When I finally was in a comfortable enough relationship with a white man, I was like, listen, there's this word I've never been able to pronounce out loud. And now I feel comfortable and vulnerable enough to tell someone that. So can you please
help me?
And he was like, Syracuse? I'm like, oh, that's it.
What did you used to say?
I don't know. I think when I read it, I just pointed at it and said it in my head.
Yeah, I understand.
I went through a phase where I was really into punk music, and so I read, what is it? It's by Legs McNeil, and it's called Please Kill Me, The Oral History of the Punk Movement.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Mm-hmm.
It came up so much because the university came up, New York, and it was just talked about so much, and I never needed it in normal conversation, and books were always my way to escape class, because I was, like, smart and weird.
Best combination ever. Mm-hmm. I hope there's some teenagers listening to this. Very quickly, I actually went to Syracuse undergrad, and it's a pronunciation thing because you say Syracuse, but I say Syracuse, but it's just a pronunciation thing. They're both right. They're, you know, in terms of being smart and weird, I can relate to also being smart and weird and feeling like a total outsider in a lot of ways growing up. But then in other ways, you know, luckily I had a supportive family and I always had like a core group of friends who accepted me, I think, for the most part. But you said something that really resonated with me because I was like, oh my God, this is exactly how I feel. I just never articulated it this particular way. But you said, I'm a firm believer in the statement, be who you needed when you were younger. And I love that. And talk more about that. Who did you need when you were younger, Bex?
I feel like when I was younger, I grew up in a place that was predominantly very white. And I'm Mexican, I'm first gen. So it was very hard to see myself anywhere. There was not a whole lot of representation in the 90s. So it was very bizarre to be like, well, what am I? And being Mexican and being Latinx, I mean, that's a whole conversation about identity issues to come.
Yes.
You know, it was hard. And it wasn't until I grew up and saw like strong brown and black women just all around me in different forms of representation. There was one episode that you did where you talked about the sense of romantic longing.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes, I had so much of that from such a young age. Too young.
Yeah, because I was someone who really loved to read. So I was so interested. You know, the Bronte sisters were a little boring for me. I think that all the class structure and stuff I wasn't really into. But various layers of just falling in love, being with someone was just like, oh, I want this fun tale. I feel like in a sense, for so long, I was trying to attain that through love. And growing up in the 90s, everything was so hypersexualized. I had this long confusion of lust and love. So I'm trying to finally, as an adult, figure that out and how that kind of, where that came from. I think that that's just a part of like growing up. In editing this podcast, because again, I probably am the person who has listened to it the most, because each week I'm like, holy shit, this is something I'm like going through right now. And we were talking about how it's so nice to hear these tales of your life because we live a very similar life. So I'm like, oh, wow, look at this badass woman doing stuff I want to do. It's all about getting to a place where you vibrate at a similar frequency to the people around you. So it's all about getting there.
It's all about getting there. Life is about the getting there, wherever there is for you. And it's different at different times of your life. And certainly that romantic longing, and like you, I obviously was a big reader when I was a kid, and I would just read these books. And I wonder if we weren't so obsessed with romance as a culture. I mean, I don't know if it's like, you know, say we had multiple things that were presented to us so often, because romance is something, you know, from fairy tales, we're getting romantic stories and all the songs are love songs and all this stuff. And it's always being, you know, pushed on us. And I wonder if it hadn't been that much inundation of romance, 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 would I have had that longing for romance? But I've had a longing for something else. I don't know, like maybe I would be a rocket scientist if I didn't read romantic novels when I was a small child. I mean, what do you think?
I think that's a really interesting statement too, because I feel romance is always just something that is more approved for like women, young girls to read. And when you're younger, when you read romance novels, you're like, I'm so mature. I'm such an adult. Like, I know what love's about. I understand. But then, like, I don't know. I feel like I wish we lived in a culture that just pushed science and math, because I was not particularly good at either one of those growing
up. Neither was I.
I
opted out. I was intimidated. So I just opted out and told myself that I couldn't do it, which is not true. I know that now, but at the time, that became my truth.
I'm lazy a little bit when it comes to, and math and science both have an exact answer, and you can't make it up.
You can't bullshit it. Yeah. Can't finesse that sentence.
I could give you a very articulate answer of whatever question you're asking, and people might be like, oh, but yeah, math, I can't do it.
I just glazed over. I don't know how I got through school. I'm resourceful. I'll give myself that. So going back to growing up as a first generation Mexican American in St. Louis, was there a community? Why did your parents take you to St. Louis?
My family lived in LA, but my dad had to relocate for work. And I feel because he was someone who lived in all these larger cities, he was kind of ready for a more quiet life. And I'm just here living like there has to be more to life than the Midwest. Yeah. It was hard because there weren't a whole lot of Latin individuals. And if they were, they were closer to the city. And I lived in the county growing up. So it's very different.
Just had a question about, you know, being a romantic young girl growing up and you're surrounded by white boys. How was that? How was that for you? Did you feel accepted? Did you feel, you know, you weren't even under consideration?
So I think maybe because I went to school with the same group of people since kindergarten, I feel like I was always kind of just like weird and a little chubby. I feel like I was kind of not the norm of like everyone around me.
I bet you were so cute.
I actually look at photos the other day and I was like, wow, look how adorable. You know, that makes you just at times think, oh wow, I'm just so weird. Everyone else is like about brownies and this and that. And my mom didn't really, she was very like, I don't trust anybody with my kids. I'm really glad for now in hindsight, but it kept us kind of sheltered and it was kind of hard to socialize. So one day I especially remember as being difficult was like an international food day where we had avocado and some kid literally threw up because he said it was so gross.
Okay. Oh my God.
I'm sure you pay the 99 cents now for guac. But
I was going to say, where is he now? Okay. And how much guacamole does he inhale on a like weekly basis? That's what I want to know. It's interesting. And it's also interesting, you know, that you say that listening to me talk about my life and my stories, you relate so much. And it's like kind of being, if you feel on the outside, which I think probably most people feel that way. It just doesn't appear that way looking at them. It doesn't really matter, you know, the color you are. It doesn't matter all those things because like I grew up, you know, in New York City and I, elementary school, junior high school, I went to school in East Harlem. My classes were predominantly black and brown kids.
like diverse. And so we had, you know, we had Asian kids, we had white kids. I had diverse schools, but it was still predominantly black and brown because it was East Harlem. I still was like that odd person out in my mind, you know, even though I looked like most of my classmates. So it's just interesting when you just feel different than other people, it doesn't matter what you might seem to have in common with them because that feeling can still exist.
It's weird how we internalize it and how later in life you're just like, oh, that's why I felt that way, which yeah. I think is both a wonderful and cathartic feeling about growing up, really just figuring yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. Yeah. I don't know. It's like, for me, I think when I was growing up, it was stuff, I got the message very early on that I wasn't a cute girl in terms of what boys liked. That led to loads of comparison that it just took like decades to undo. And I'm just reflecting on all that. You're really bringing me back there, Bax. This is like, it's just so interesting. I don't have any children of my own and I don't plan on ever having any, well, I might adopt one day, but I don't plan on having any babies. So anyway, but every time I see a child, especially a little girl, I just want to like hold her and tell her how amazing she is and how everything's going to be okay. Everything you're feeling is normal and don't worry and find people who support you and you can do anything. Because there's still that part, that little girl in me that's still, I guess, not 100% healed. I digress. Gary Vee, he's an entrepreneur and an author and he's a big personality and has a big social media presence. And I mean, he talks about a lot of things. He's actually hilarious. You should follow him just for shits and giggles. I will also link to Gary Vee's social media in the show notes. But he's always talking about how he's such a big believer in humanity. He's like, yeah, the world is fucked up. But do you know how much damage we could do to each other as humans if we wanted to? Most people are fundamentally good. You know, like we don't walk around pushing each other into traffic and punching each other in the face and tripping each other. You know, like we are generally, obviously, there are a lot of exceptions and we tend to focus on those exceptions. But for the most part, we're pretty good people. Like everyone's pretty good. Everyone's pretty nice to each other, at least face to face. Now, when it comes to the internet and social media, where now you're anonymous and now you're not viewing the person on the other side of the screen as a person, that's a whole other problem. But I really do believe that most people are good-hearted and everybody is doing the best that they can. And the best that they can is not always acceptable, right? And the desire to do better is what makes us go forward as humans. I feel encouraged as well, as much as I can feel really depressed about the state of our culture and politics and some of the horrific things that are going on that we are paying for as taxpayers. But okay, get off the soapbox.
Tell me about it. You know what? There's an SNL skit where Tina Fey was talking about, what is it called? Sheet panning or something, where you just are eating your feelings about everything that's happening in the world with cake. And I'm like, you know what? Is that what it is? Because I really just feel like sometimes I'm like, man, cake just sounds so good.
Oh my God. Cake always sounds good.
True.
There's never, cake's always a good idea. It's not always a good idea. I'm sorry. It's not always a good idea, but it always sounds like a good idea. Big difference. Another show, not a podcast, but an old show that I know had a big influence on you is Loveline with Dr. Drew Pinsky. How did that show kind of shape your view of romance and sexuality?
Because I think I had that sense of romantic longing for so long. I think that I was super confused about like feelings of romance are only connected to sex. But Loveline was just very interesting and it was just very adult because I kind of found it probably at an age that was my romance novels. You had your romance novels, I had Loveline. And maybe it was because I was so interested in audio that I loved it so much because I listened to it on a radio station that I later got to work at. So it was almost like everything went full circle and I actually got to meet him. He gave a lecture when I was in college and I got to stand up and talk to him and that was so cool. Everything like connected. I don't really follow him anymore. I hope he's doing well and doing good things. I just think that for the time it was just so interesting to hear these conversations about just different things related to sex, and I think that opened my eyes very early on that I was like, whoa, there's like a whole world outside of vanilla sex, and it just made a lot of different lights go on in my head that I guess I probably wouldn't have gotten to otherwise.
Yeah, thank goodness for shows like that. I mean, I was never a huge fan of Loveline, but I certainly watched it, and when his show on MTV, I used to watch that. You know, I learned about sex from all of these various sources, none of which were my parents, like, you know, and I remember having sex education in high school. And I remember our sex ed teacher saying, do they even have sex ed anymore? I don't know if they do, but I remember my sex ed teacher saying, I don't know why we were talking about lube, but we were. And he said, if you're doing it right, you don't need lube. Remember that very clearly. That's basically like the only thing I remember from sex ed. If you're doing it right, you don't need lube, which is obviously an outrageous statement. And I just remember the firmness with which he said it. So we don't have these kinds of shows. We don't have these kinds of conversations. Yeah, it's like, how else are you supposed to figure things out? You can't just rely on the adults who happen to be around you, who, by the way, a lot of them don't know what they're doing either, you know?
Related to the sex ed class, I know someone who is raising triplets, and the triplets are, I think, in middle school, still not learning about general biology. So that really makes me a little Yikes. Worried about the future.
I'm sorry, I should give my parents a little bit more credit. They definitely, I remember having a book that was like, what's going on down there? What's happening? There's like some kind of classic puberty book for kids that the name is escaping me, but they gave me that book and I read my sister's copy of Our Bodies, Ourselves, which taught me a lot, which is like a classic, very feminist book from the 60s. And it's got like, you know, all these illustrations, anatomical, but then also like photographs, and you see like, you know, women and like real bodies and pubic hair and underarm hair. It's actually like a pretty cool book in my memory. So I did get some. Okay, I take that back. But I feel like the things that made a really big impression on me are always the things that I saw in a movie or heard from, obviously, this idiot teacher, or what I heard from my friends, which was also a whole other source of ridiculousness. You know, you mentioned figuring out, because you dated white guys, right? You always dated white guys because those were the only guys that were available to date. What's that been like for you, that journey of being in a lot of interracial relationships and feeling like that token?
I feel like you deal with a lot of microaggressions that you either have to learn to deal with or like correct. So a lot of, oh, like, you're so pretty for a Mexican girl, or, oh, you've changed my opinion on Mexican girls. I'm like, people still say things like this, like, deal with it or don't. I feel like I get very quickly labeled as like the aggressive girl. And I also think that my threshold for microaggressions and internalized unconscious bias that people don't deal with, I have a very, very low threshold for it. I have a boyfriend who is actually a white man who is very wonderful and very conscious of his effort to both educate himself and correct tacky white supremacist behavior of people around him. So I feel like that's just very important to me now, is having a partner who is trying to help me fight for a world that's more equitable.
Yeah, that's very important. And yeah, I talked to a lot of women of color who, well, I think there's kind of a, I guess it's not totally 50-50. It's probably like 45% of the women of color I talk to kind of almost exclusively date white men, and not by choice necessarily, just by circumstance. Another 45% actively won't date, you know, white men. And then there's like 10% who are open to it, but, you know, haven't really, they don't do it, but they're maybe would be open to it. And usually the women who won't date white men, it's like, well, I just can't date somebody who doesn't understand X. Like, I can't be with somebody who I have to explain this to, or I can't be, you know, there's a lot of that feeling of, I need somebody to come to the relationship with all of their worldviews matching mine. And if they're not, then like, I'm not interested. And I totally understand that on the one hand, but I also say, listen, is every white man a fit for you? Absolutely not, right? But are there white men in this world who are good-hearted and they're conscious and they are going to see you as the complicated, beautiful human that you are and love you, you know, and all that stuff? It's important to know that, yeah, there are a lot of allies out there for women of color who feel like they might have a feeling like there's not, especially if you're focused on the news and social media and like how polarized our culture feels right now. So I'm glad, all this is to say that I'm very glad that you have a great partner. My partner is also a white man, so I understand. And he's also amazing. He's also not American, which I think also helps. It helps and it hurts. I mean, it helps because he doesn't have all the, you know, conditioned his whole life, racial stuff that we have. But he also, there, I have had to explain some things to him.
Like, I could see
not,
that.
not stuff that he's done necessarily, but like explain some things of like, no, why like that is an offensive thing, you know? And he's like, oh, okay, I get it, you know?
I relate to that because sometimes I have to explain to my partner why it upset me, and because he doesn't get it at first. Think about it like this. And then it's, oh, that's what makes the light bulb go off. He like lets me be upset and then realizes that it's not directly related to him. It's just something about this has hit an internalized nerve that she did not realize was there. He's really wonderful about understanding. So, you know, I try to be as patient as I can in explaining.
Just happen to be talking about race right now, but in any relationship, regardless of issues, there's always going to be conversations that need to be had, and communication is, you know, 90% of a relationship's, like, I don't know, maybe success or failure. How to communicate with people is there is no downside. It can only benefit you, for sure.
Yeah, and race isn't like the only factor, obviously, in lack of communication, because my mom is very quick to remind me, you know, it's different for you because, you know, she lived in Mexico. And she's just like, if you dated Mexican men, then you'd have to deal with their mother's meddling. And that's not much better.
Yes, I know. Well, that's the thing. It's always something.
Find your something that, like, you know, makes you comfortable. Boundaries are super important in any relationship, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's so funny. I'm like on this mission lately to just try to figure out how to explain to people or articulate better. We need to just reframe our entire way that we culturally view relationships. Everyone needs to understand that, like, you are 50%, you are a co-creator of that relationship, instead of thinking that the person is going to come to you and then everything is going to magically work out. No. All the things that you're struggling with right now, feeling worthy and, you know, ability to be vulnerable and communicate and conflict resolution and all these things, you need to work on those things right now, because then you can get into the relationship, and then when you get into the relationship, you can actually make it work. I think that these kinds of conversations, in like whatever the particular topic is, it's really helpful for people to remember, oh yeah, no matter what the subject matter is, we have to do better in how we relate to other people, taking the responsibility for, you know, how we're showing up.
That's really important. You know, I think we all have to take that moment to reflect on, everyone's the bad guy in someone else's story. So sometimes, you know, we have to take the responsibility and the blame that, like, maybe I wasn't the best person in that relationship, or maybe I was toxic in this way or reacting to this toxic situation. And I think that maybe that's not always just about who's toxic and who's not toxic. It's just like, it's never a good fit. And kind of going forward and figuring out boundaries and love and what we're okay with and what we're not okay with, it's all just really things that we need to figure out within ourselves. Because really, yes, anytime you do, like you said, anytime you show up, you're just, it's basically like you want someone else to fix you, and that's never okay.
It's a really, really bad strategy. It doesn't work. And I know that for you, you've had a real journey of learning to love yourself and become more confident. You know, I have as well. You know, it's ongoing. It's a lifelong journey. And what's worked for you?
For me, a lot of just throwing myself into my projects and things that make me happy. Just because I think for a lot of people, it's an interesting time where we don't necessarily have to stick to one profession like our parents for our whole lives. Like, we have the ability to switch and try things and do different things. So having a family that's been so supportive in my different creative endeavors and what I want to do has been really great. And you know, I realize that not everyone has maybe a family that's their great support system. And that's okay, because, you know, friends or whatever you think is your inner circle of people who really just understand you. Journaling, honestly, I'm kind of into witchcraft, things like that.
Ooh, because do tell.
I think I've been trying to get back in touch with various customs and herbal remedies and stuff that my ancestors would have done before the colonization and the forcing of the Catholic faith. I don't know. I really like learning about the stars and the planets and all that. And also just, this herb does this, and this herb is supposed to do this if you eat it, and it's supposed to whatever. It kind of just makes me feel a little bit more connected to the universe.
I believe it. I believe it. I dig it. I love everything you just said. And it's like, again, this is another thing I want to like scream out to the world. I just want everybody to take the time to go inward and just love yourself. Just figure out whatever that pathway is for you to feel more confident, to understand yet your inherent value, to draw boundaries with people, because that's self-care, you know, drawing healthy boundaries and just taking the actions that we need to feel better about ourselves. Because when we do that, it makes everything else easier. And if we did not have a worthiness crisis in this country, I do not believe that it's possible for us to have a President Trump. Yeah. If everyone loved themselves, that would not be the person who got elected to office.
I saw this thing that someone posted. It was like a tweet or something from someone not in the U.S. And it was like, you know what? President Trump is kind of the president that the U.S. really deserves right now. And I unfortunately think that in some way we do, because we did fall to a sense of complacency and just being okay with the status quo. And that's what leads to things like this. So I think that we're learning, we're building, a lot of people's. For me, both inward and also just like realizing that my voice, the tiny bit of power that I have here, whether it's contacting my senators or doing this or whatever, take the time to do it, because it does matter. And it's something that not everyone has the ability or right to do. I try to keep that in mind when I feel helpless too, is we're trying. And if they don't change, then we have the ability to vote them out.
Yes. Again, yes to all of that. You know, being politically active and doing the work. I honestly think they're connected. Like when I say that I believe that we have a worthiness crisis, it's something that I've been talking a lot about because I believe it so strongly. And if we had not all been collectively lied to and marketed to for generations that we need all of these external things to be good enough, then everyone wouldn't feel like, oh my God, I'm not good enough, right? And I need all of these other things, and I need to, in order to feel better about myself, I have to put somebody else down. I need somebody to look down on. I need somebody to look up to. I need somebody, you know, all of these things to compete with. I need all of this stuff could be solved if we all just love each other. I'm like, I'm such a hippie on this on this front. Wait, really quick, because I just want to just ask you another question about the witchcraft stuff. So how do you even learn about that? Like, what are you doing exactly?
I found a couple of different groups online. It's been interesting because I've seen a lot of different articles about how I'm not the only one who's doing this. Like, there's been a big reflection of people kind of finding different things that fulfill them spiritually other than religion, because it's not always something we align. Just learning basic things, I feel like I kind of have a feel for it. Something I like is candle magic, and that's where you basically just have a candle of a certain color, and then you can pack it. You can do all these various things with it to then increase your intent. And because I do have such a fond interest of it, I've started having sessions for people who want to do this, and it's because it's interesting. And I feel like for me personally, I just like the idea of putting all my energy in hope that something's gonna happen, because even if it's just like in this external thing of like, I'm gonna light this candle and throw a little cinnamon on it to attract some good vibes, that in itself makes me feel like, oh, I want it so bad that I'm asking the universe for it. Yeah. So it at least definitely has it on my mind.
So even if it's like, maybe it's not the actual spell, and maybe it is, I'm not saying it isn't, but it's not an actual spell, but it's the fact that it's the intent that it puts within your heart. Like, it makes that more real to you. And then you're more inclined to do whatever is in your power to make it happen. And then, you know, whatever unseen forces are bringing things to you are activated, right? The idea?
Yeah. So for me, I just kind of like doing stuff with candles just because it's fairly simple. It's colorful and I like candles. So everyone has their level of what they find interesting. And there's different magic as well. Like, I know people who are really into plants, talk to their plants, love their plants, use their herbs.
I talk to my plants.
Do you? Do you? Yeah, you might be totally a green witch. Because
I might be a green witch, actually. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like so activated around plants, and I'm so inspired by them, and I just like, I can't get enough of them. I can't, like, I can just like sit and stare at plants and it brings me total peace.
Well, if you ever grow something and then use like the herbs or the fruit or whatever in your cooking, do you ever just feel like it's the most magnificent thing you've ever made in your life?
Yes, I do feel that way. I'm like extremely happy and excited that it's something that I grew.
No, I could see that. Next time, if you really have a specific intent and something you're feeling a little like nervous about when you're making something, just think about the goal that you're trying to get in each step, or whatever, or food, or whatever the situation is. Maybe you're drying out some tea, whatever.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I like this. Okay, so maybe you probably know this because you have listened to this episode a number of times, but the episode that I did with Damona Hoffman, I talk about my oracle cards. I do oracle card readings for people sometimes, and I would be happy to do an oracle card reading for you. And maybe you could do a candle magic ritual or something for me, and we can see what happens.
Ooh, I can send you a dressed candle. You'll send me your address. Yeah, because I mean, you're going to have a lot of great conversations here in the near future. Maybe around Halloween, we can link back up.
Yeah.
And do something
cool.
See
what happened. Yeah, let's do it. Ooh. And I'm actually very randomly, I call her my psychic life coach. Her name is Marcella Kroll. She's based here in LA. And I ran into her the other day and she's, oh my God, I'm on this panel and we're trying to find a moderator. Will you moderate this panel? I'm like, absolutely. And it's something witchcraft related. And I'm really excited. I'm like, hell yes, I'll do that. Why wouldn't I? But I can't remember the name of it right now because I haven't super confirmed it.
That's so
whatever cool. Works.
I agree.
Okay. Whatever works in the service of love and good. And so speaking of Latinx, something about me that you may not know, Bex, is that I too am a Latina.
Ooh.
People are like, really? Yeah. My grandfather was from Puerto Rico, and actually I'm named after him because his name is Francisco, and my parents like the Italian better than the Spanish, which is why my name is Francesca. And my grandmother was from Ecuador. My heritage on my father's side of the family is all Latinos.
That's so cool. Yeah, you had never mentioned that.
Well, Bex, thank you so much. I will... Absolutely. Everyone listening, I'm going to link to her social media and her website. Please follow her. Please check out her podcast. Bex, is there anything else you want to share before we say goodbye today?
Just thank you so much for having me, and so excited for everyone listening to the show. You're learning so much. Dear Franny is wonderful. And there's going to be so many great episodes to come. So please keep listening.
Thank you so much, Bex. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for being a great editor and for all of the good that you're doing in the world. I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
And I appreciate all of you who are listening right now. Thank you so much. And if you like what you hear, please feel free to subscribe and let me know how you like the show. You can follow me on all social media at Dear Franny, and you can follow the podcast at Dear Franny Podcast on Instagram. Thank you. Have a great day, and make sure you check out the show notes for all of Bex's links. All right.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Bex Carlos. Please be sure to check the show notes for links to Bex's social media as well as her podcast. And in the show notes, you can also find links to the social media for Dear Franny Podcast. We are at Dear Franny Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. I am at Dear Franny across all social media. And I want to give a special shout out to everybody who's been listening in Norway. We debuted at number two relationship podcast in Norway. I'm like blown away and thank you so much. Also want to give a shout out to Brazil and Australia and the UK and Canada and the USA, because we made the charts in all those places, and I'm so grateful and proud. So if you are enjoying the show, please make sure that you subscribe wherever you're listening so you don't miss any future episodes. And I would also love a rating and a review. I'd love to hear from you. You can also hit me up on social media. Thank you. Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, have a beautiful day or night wherever you are in the world. And until next time, goodbye.